Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. On today's show, we'll be talking with Virginia Messina, registered dietitian and co-author of the new book, Even Vegans Die. That's coming up a little later on the show, but first some news.
The Center for Biological Diversity reports that conservationists sued the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services over its carnivore killing program in Colorado. Included in the larger program are controversial plans to kill as many as 120 mountain lions and black bears in Colorado in a misguided experiment aimed at increasing the state's mule deer population. The suit argues that the federal wildlife killing program failed to fully analyze the environmental impacts of its destruction of wildlife in Colorado, including other native carnivores like coyotes and foxes. According to Bethany Cotton, Wildlife Program Director for Wild Earth Guardians, Wildlife Services is once again using taxpayer dollars to kill native wildlife while ignoring science and public opinion. She further states that the public is entitled to know the full environmental impacts of publicly funded, scientifically unsound, and ethically bankrupt wildlife killing. In December 2016, Colorado Parks and Wildlife approved two highly controversial plans to kill large numbers of black bears and mountain lions to assess the impact on mule deer population. The plans charge Wildlife Services, the federal government's wildlife killing arm, with carrying out much of the killing using public funds. Wildlife Services' involvement in the experiment lacks proper review as demanded by federal law. The lawsuit alleges that Wildlife Services failed to consider the impact of its statewide program of killing native carnivores, including black bears, mountain lions, bobcats, coyotes, and foxes, will have on the environment and Colorado's unique wild places. The groups are challenging the program's finding that no significant impact will occur as a result of the program's planned trapping, poisoning, and shooting of hundreds of native animals in Colorado. The organization's challenge also targets the program's incorporation of Parks and Wildlife's contentious predator killing studies as part of its work plan without conducting a thorough environmental review. Colette Adkins, a biologist and attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity, expressed that she was outraged that Colorado plans to kill bears and mountain lions to boost deer populations for hunters, and that the state relies on outdated and unscientific thinking that disregards the importance of predators. The scientific analysis that their lawsuit seeks would show that Colorado's predator killing program is ecologically harmful as well as ineffective and cruel. Wildlife Guardians and the Center for Biological Diversity are asking the court to order the Wildlife Services to complete a full environmental impact statement before it participates in the state's scientifically flawed carnivore killing plans or conducts other wildlife killing activities in Colorado. For more information, go to biologicaldiversity.org.
The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has filed a lawsuit to try to stop two California school districts from serving processed meat to students. The lawsuit against the Los Angeles and Poway, California school districts states that meat being served violates a state education code requirement that all food served in cafeterias must have the greatest nutritional value possible and be of the highest quality. Mark Kennedy, Vice President of Legal Affairs for the Physicians Committee, said in an interview, "When you look at all the science that's coming out and pretty much universal consensus that processed meats are carcinogens, it makes it perfectly clear that any school that's serving processed meat is not meeting the state standard." The Physicians Committee on Responsible Medicine is basing the lawsuit on a 2015 finding reviewed by the International Agency for Research on Cancer of over 800 studies that found that processed meats like bacon, sausage, and ham are carcinogenic. The study made the determination that eating processed meat causes colorectal cancer. The PCRM also cited a 2009 study by the National Institutes of Health that looked at 500,000 people and discovered that processed meat increases the risk of dying from heart disease. A study by the National Cancer Institute, which was released last August, that stated children today are more than doubly at risk for colon and rectal cancer than those growing up in the 1950s.
The Ontario, Canada woman who gained international attention after she faced potential jail time for giving water to slaughter-bound pigs has been acquitted. Ontario Superior Court of Justice David Harris found Anita Krajnik, a 50-year-old longtime activist known for protesting outside of Toronto area slaughterhouses, not guilty of criminal mischief. Ms. Krajnik was charged in September 2015 after ignoring a truck driver's request not to feed a truck loaded with 190 pigs moments away from a Burlington slaughterhouse. Video of the incident posted to YouTube shows the pair exchanging heated words and what has become a symbol of the escalating tensions between the animal protection movement and the meat industry. Ultimately, Justice Harris said he was not convinced that a crime had even occurred. Throughout the 5 days of hearings, opposing counsel argued Ms. Krajnik had interfered with the operation, enjoyment, or use of the pigs by its owners, and that by giving the animals an unknown substance or possible contaminant, Ms. Krajnik and other activists pose a potential safety risk in an otherwise strictly regulated system. But Justice Harris dismissed both those arguments. After the decision, Ms. Krajnik and her dozens of gathered supporters were quick to claim victory. Ms. Krajnik told a large gathering of reporters that compassion should never be illegal, and the golden rule applies to all animals, including giving water to a thirsty, panting pig on her way to slaughter.
Coming up next, we'll have a conversation with Virginia Messina about her new book, Even Vegans Die, which she wrote with Carol Adams and Patty Brettman. Virginia is a registered dietitian who specializes in vegan nutrition and is the author of a number of books on that subject. Virginia has worked as a dietitian for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, has been director of nutrition services for a group of medical clinics in Washington, D.C., and she serves on several advisory boards to professional nutrition organizations. Stay with us. Our conversation with Virginia is next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on ACT Radio, Jenny Messina. Thanks for being with us, Jenny.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Jenny, can you start out by telling our listeners how you got involved in veganism?
Well, you know, I'm a registered dietitian, have a master's in public health. So, of course, I've been interested in nutrition and diet for a long time. But I came into this field as an omnivore. I was a meat eater when I first became a dietitian. After I got my dietetics degree, I became more interested in animal rights, started learning a lot about factory farming and about where our food comes from, and started to make that connection. And I just found myself in this perfect position because I had a background in nutrition that I could start talking about vegan nutrition and giving people good, solid, evidence-based information on how to be a healthy vegan.
So is it safe to say that you didn't receive any teaching in veganism when you were getting your coursework?
I certainly did not, no. I came into the field of dietetics believing very strongly that people needed to consume dairy products, for example, in order to have healthy bones. And it really wasn't until I was, until after my education, when I was actually a registered dietitian and was starting to look at these issues in more depth, that that I learned that a lot of the things that I had learned in dietetic school were not correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it just takes a while for the curriculum to change to keep up with the latest scientific evidence. There's a lot of inertia in trying to get curriculum changes, but I think it's just so important that people become aware that not everything that you learn in school is the latest information.
It's really true, and it's one of the reasons when I hear from people who want to become a dietitian and they're very concerned about going into these more mainstream kinds of programs, I tell them that it's a great opportunity to for them to share different perspectives on nutrition in their program. And so by going into a dietetics program where people are not learning about these vegan issues, you have a real opportunity for outreach.
Yeah, it seems.
I was just going to say, it seems like it's been that we've known about this stuff, that animal foods contribute to heart disease and cancer for decades. And so, you know, they're really slow to catch up with the latest science.
Well, yeah, you know, and I think that if you talk with any mainstream dietitian, I think most are actually going to agree with you that people need to be replacing animal foods in their diet with plant foods in order to lower risk for chronic diseases. The issue, of course, is that we don't really know how far you need to go with that, whether you actually have to be vegan in order to have a low risk for cancer and heart disease. And so what we want, what we really want to I think that what we need to be looking at is the fact that we have to look at issues like the environment. We have to look at the treatment of animals in making food recommendations. And dietitians have a responsibility to do that. We can't just be talking about health. We need to look at all of the impacts that our diet have.
You know, I, in my advocacy, I tend to rely on health quite a bit. I think it's easier for people to hear the health arguments than the animal reasons.
Yeah, I never rely on the health arguments in,
oh, really?
In my advocate. No, I don't. I don't because, and again, it's because we don't, you know, we know that plant-based diets are important for health, but there's this whole range of plant-based diets that can protect health. There's only one diet that can protect animals, and that's a vegan diet.
Wow.
And so I stick with that argument because it's infallible. And, you know, you never have to get into debates with people about the nutrition. And when we look at the actual nutrition science and the research, there are lots of areas where there is legitimate debate. But when it comes to animal rights, as far as I'm concerned, there is no debate.
That's true.
That's a very good point, because it is true that if people eat a very small amount of whatever—
Right.
It's not really going to impact
their
health.
It's not going to make or break their health, but it's going to make or break the welfare of the animals.
It's like
the environment.
It's like smoking one cigarette a day, you know.
Right.
Everything in moderation, as
they
like to excuse themselves with. We want to talk about your new book. I'd like to be able to say I enjoyed reading it. But I think I'd rather say it was eye-opening. It gave me a lot of good direction I need to remember, especially that, and we're talking about your new book, Even Vegans Die.
Right.
It made me, first of all, realize that, you know, we have to be careful with our language when we try to say that a vegan diet will prevent cancer or heart disease. It lowers the risk, but you know, you can't really say you know, that it prevents or guarantees any kind of health.
That's right. And that was of course one of the big reasons why we wrote the book, was because we wanted to take the shame out of illness for vegans by acknowledging that a vegan diet is not a guarantee that you won't get sick. And we see this in the vegan community a lot. When vegans get cancer or heart disease or diabetes, or when vegans are overweight, that there's a great deal of shame attached to this, because we feel like this isn't supposed to happen to vegans, and maybe we did something wrong, or we're not being a good role model for veganism. Anybody can get sick. Anybody can be overweight. And we need to really be more compassionate about this towards other vegans, and we need to be more realistic about it, because it helps us to be more compassionate, and it also helps us to make better decisions about our own health care and about our legacy for animals.
And caring for others.
And caring for others,
About 15 years ago or so, my wife was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And so what I did right away was download like 25 pages on cancer from the Physicians Committee on Responsible Medicine. And it maybe that long ago, I thought that cancer could be cured or at least controlled by a vegan diet. I'm not so sure now, but if I were diagnosed, I know I'd be eating broccoli sprouts and turmeric every meal.
Yeah, I think I would too. I think that when people have a serious diagnosis like that, you pretty much want to do anything that you possibly can in order to, you know, to increase your likelihood of getting better. And that's okay. You know, that's just fine. But we just want to make sure that people understand that when you do get sick, or if you don't get better, this is not because veganism or your diet has failed you. And it's something, you know, it's something that we really wanted to look at in the book, which is the fact that veganism never fails. It always is successful in protecting animals and in making the world a kinder place, even if it doesn't always protect our health.
That's true. That's true. An important point you make in the book is that thinking that a vegan diet might be the solution to our cancer it might delay us in seeking medical treatment. But I can't get off the notion that chemo and radiation are very dangerous, and I don't think I would go that route. It seems to me that as many people die from chemo as die from cancer. Dr. Michael Greger, who wrote the terrific foreword to the book, Even Vegans Die, Greger says that medical practice is one of the top 10 reasons for death in our country. I really believe that, too.
Well, that can certainly be true in some cases, but there are, you know, many cases of where people are cured of cancer through chemotherapy and radiation, or their lives are greatly extended. You know, we don't have that kind of data for things like diet. We don't have any true research to show us that people can cure their cancer or extend their life through diet or other kinds of natural means. And that doesn't mean it's still a good idea to eat a healthy diet. That's still going to protect your health in other ways. But it's always a personal decision about whether someone is going to seek more traditional kinds of treatments for these diseases. But we did want to make sure that vegans had the best information so that they could decide whether that was the right thing for them or not.
Yeah, and it is very traumatic to undergo those processes, but in fact, occasionally they are successful.
So, yeah.
And then you could eat a very healthy diet to help repair the damage done by the chemotherapy.
Right, and of course, and the research shows, you know, that people who have cancer who eat a healthy diet decrease their risk of dying from other diseases.
Right, yeah. And I think that leads to another point is in your book is that, you know, even vegans need to pay attention to their health and go see the doctor on a regular basis, because I think many people will look for an excuse not to see the doctor.
Yeah.
Cough, Greg.
Yeah.
Greg Lawson. And it's a pretty good excuse, but I do like that you make a point that really common practices for seeing a doctor on a regular basis are definitely important for us.
But
too.
try to find a vegan doctor.
But you know what? You don't need to have a vegan doctor. As your doctor doesn't have to be vegan. You're vegan, and you're taking care of your health as well as you can. If you want to have cancer screenings, we recommended that people have the cancer screenings that the National Cancer Institute recommends. Just a handful of them that are shown to be actually effective. That's important, and vegans might ignore that because they believe, if vegans believe that they can't get cancer, then they might not get appropriate screenings. And, if the doctor who's doing the screenings isn't vegan, so be it. Maybe it'll be a good influence on him or her.
I want to tell a quick story about a talk I gave at Texas Tech Medical School. I asked them if they were familiar with the quote, "Let food be thy medicine and let medicine be thy food." And nobody in the room raised their hand.
And I said, really?
Yeah. And I said, "That was Hippocrates. How many of you have heard of Hippocrates?" And nobody raised their hand.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So that's just another reason I stay away from doctors.
Well, don't stay too far away from them, because doctors could, even if they're not very good medical historians, they can still do some good.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important to get diagnosed early if you do have one of these chronic diseases that is genetically based or environmental exposure. The earlier you get diagnosed, the better chances you have of overcoming it. So I think I agree that, we shouldn't skip that.
Yeah, it's important to get those kinds of screenings and to if there is a problem to catch it in the beginning. And then of course we also talked about issues of self-care, because we vegans can be so bad about taking care of ourselves, in part because we think that our diet is just going to take care of us, but also because we are so devoted to activities based on saving animals, and that can get really stressful, and so we need to be, doing things to take care of stress and anxiety as well.
Yeah, that, you make that point in the book about how vegans might have more empathy and that causes us to be prone for depression when it comes to the way animals are treated.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
And you also mentioned that exercise is a really good complement to a healthy diet and really helps diffuse stress and can help you maximize your health by coupling the two together. That exercise is a vital component. And I think, you know, a lot of people I know they have that are vegans, they're thinking the same thing, that I'm eating a vegan diet, therefore I'm healthy, so I really don't have to exercise that much. But
right.
Of course, that's another fallacy that we're trying to trick ourselves with, me included.
That's right. I know. And of course, exercise is absolutely crucial. And we also talk in the book, we have a chapter on mourning, because, you know, it is even vegans die. And one of the things that we talk about is the fact that animal activists are always in mourning. We're always mourning the death of animals, and that can become very stressful. So it is important to take care of each other by not shaming one another when we get sick, and also to take care of ourselves through exercise and whatever, you know, whatever is meaningful to you or allows you to manage stress and anxiety.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because you often wonder, like, when we see these horrific pictures of animals suffering and you look at them and, you know, it does take a toll and you feel very sad and upset. And then you wonder how other people can look at those same images and just dismiss them, you know, and it's...
And that makes you, and that's even more upsetting.
Right,
and,
exactly.
More anxiety producing.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Because
we feel kind of alone in the mourning that we're doing and the stress that we're feeling over this.
Right, and it diminishes your hope a little bit. And in your book, you also touch on that, on why being a vegan means that you can always live with hope in the face of illness and death. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, we talked about the fact that when people have a terminal illness, there's always this tendency to do a little bit of a life review, and that's always kind of a mixed bag, because, you know, most of us have one or two regrets in our life. But when they do these studies, one of the most common regrets that people voice when they're dying is, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life that others expect of me. And that's something that should be much less of a concern for vegans, because we live according to our values of compassion, of fairness and justice, and we live this way in a world that doesn't always accommodate our beliefs about animals. And so this can really bring a sense of peace and a sense of hopefulness at the end of life. We don't have this feeling that we wish we had lived in a way that was true to ourselves. We have done so. And so that's kind of what we meant about always living with hope, even in the face of chronic disease and death.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it seems like, you know, that is one thing that, you know, I try to remind myself of when, you know, you're around all these people and they're saying, oh, yeah, well, I love to eat cheese, or, you know, I could never give up bacon. I have to go to the Bacon Fest this weekend.
Oh,
and then in our mind comes, well, we just had one in El Paso. So
right.
But, oh, no.
Yeah, so that's one of our big city events, unfortunately.
Oh,
and, of course, we're a city that struggles with obesity as well.
And diabetes.
But, you know, when you see that, you know, then you can have a good feeling that I'm not contributing to that horrific life that poor, you know, pig
right.
had to live. And, you know, so that does give you a good feeling, you know, that you're thinking, well, maybe these people will one day have the realization that these animals really do, you know, have feelings, and they deserve to have a life as well, not one confined and used
right.
for humans. So I think that is hopeful as well.
Well, that's
I do too.
That's really stretching it. I mean, that's a huge hope to have.
Yeah, but people come to that realization at different points in their life, and I don't
sure.
think any of us, I mean, I don't think any of us were vegans from birth, and so at some
right.
point we were contributing to that kind of process as well, and it took us a while to open our eyes and hearts, and so, you know, you can always hope that others will make the connection sooner.
I guess it's
right.
just living in Texas that makes me less hopeful.
Well, I'm sure, you know, but I, you know, it's becoming easier to be vegan every year with such great information, such great recipes, good foods. So I think that I think that there's definitely room for hope for just about everybody, because I don't know about you all, but when I went vegan, it was the choices for foods, you know, were much, much smaller. It was not nearly as easy.
Yeah, so. I remember hot dogs and hamburgers in cans from years ago. Now you can get anything from haggis to lamb, all made vegan.
Yeah, there's really no excuse, is there?
No, not much.
Yeah, but I think one thing, too, since we're talking a little bit about nutrition, is although those foods are available, a lot of them are highly processed. It's always better probably to have a whole food diet that minimizes that kind of processed food. But it is a good segue
Yeah, it's a good segue, and it's also something that helps a lot of people stay vegan, the availability of those foods.
And I guess at the end of the book, you start talking a little bit even about, you know, even vegans die, and then there becomes what to do with the remains.
That's a very important chapter. Yeah. I'm going to make a will now. I've been putting it off, but you made me realize how important a will can be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm really glad to hear that, and I think a lot of people put it off. It's something that we don't want to think about, but you know, it's just, especially for those of us who might want to make some arrangements for animals, to give money to animal groups or take care of our own animals after death. It's just really important to make these arrangements. It gives you peace of mind to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I think it is important that people prepare for the eventuality of death. But in the meantime, I think you have some great ideas of how vegans can live a happier and healthier life in your book. And I hope that all of our listeners can take a look at it. Can you tell them where it might be available?
Yes, it's available. They can buy it through my website, which actually takes you to Amazon. So it's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble and directly from the publisher, Lantern Publisher. People can order it there. And in terms of eating more healthfully and living a good life now, I do have lots of nutrition information on my website, which is theveganrd.com.
Okay, we've been talking with Virginia Messina, who's a registered dietitian and co-author of a new book, Even Vegans Die. We thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks,
Jenny. Thank you,
Jenny.
Thanks.
If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org. You'll also find a calendar of events of all our upcoming vegetarian and vegan events.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.